Paul Ramel here for Q92 Radio. Well, I have a special, a very special guest on the phone with us right now. He's John Millay of the Minnesota High School League. John's been kind of a significant figure at the Minnesota High School League for 15 years, and before that, 20 years at the Star Tribune newspaper. John's probably best known for John's Journal, where he covers high school activities from across the state of Minnesota. And welcome, John, to Q92.
Paul, it's great to hear your voice. I wish we were together in person, but we'll have to make do with this.
That's right. John is retiring. Say it ain't so, but he is. He's retiring, and that's why I give him a call, and he was kind enough to spend some time with me here, so talk about his career.
Paul, I've been doing this a long time. I'm closer to 70 than 60, and my wife's been retired a couple years, so I'm ready to pull the pin on this thing.
Well, you've deserved it. What, total of what, 50 some years?
51 years as a sports writer, beginning when I was a sophomore in high school, down south of you guys a ways, down in Grettinger, Iowa. I tell Minnesotans it's basically south of Fairmont and Jackson, about 40 miles. But I was a sophomore in high school, and my English teacher pulled me aside after class one day and said, "Hey, the lady who runs the paper, the weekly newspaper that I still subscribe to, she's looking for a student to write the stories from the football games." And Mrs. White, my English teacher, looked at me and she said, "You are on the football." She basically laid down the qualifications. She said, "You're on the football team and you can write." And I'm like, "Are you talking to me? I can write? What are you talking about?" So starting in the fall of my sophomore year, I basically became my school and my town sports writer, writing about, you know, if I was on the team or not. I wrote about, and I was a football, basketball, track, golf, baseball guy, and wrote about all those and all the girls' sports we had. And then, you know, then you figure out you can do this for a living. So went to college, got a journalism degree, and away we went.
Okay. So obviously you fell in love with writing then from your... Right?
Yeah, I really liked it. You know, and on the football team, I was a lineman. My name was not in any of the stories. I didn't touch the ball because I snapped it to the quarterback on every play. But every story started with "By John Millay." And that's a pretty good ego boost for a 15-year-old whose name is not in the stories.
That's crazy. That's awesome. So where'd you go to college then, John?
Well, I started at Briarcliff College in Sioux City, Iowa. My big brother had gone there, and I'd visited, and seemed good enough for me. And I spent 2 years there, but they didn't quite have the journalism program I was looking for. So I transferred to Drake University in Des Moines, which still has a great journalism program. And I grew up reading the Des Moines Register, which is like the Star Tribune of Iowa. Mm-hmm. So when I transferred to Drake, I got hired as a part-time kid in the sports department of the Des Moines Register, and, you know, taking phone calls on Friday nights and just football reports, and you know, I got to know all these just huge sports writers I'd grown up reading. I got to know all these guys, and by the time I was before my senior year in college, I was working 40 hours a week on the sports desk at night. And just really fell in love with the whole process of putting a newspaper together. And I gave my kids a lot of grief when they talked about, you know, when they were in college, how busy they were. And I said, "Hey, your dad was a full-time student, had a work-study job on campus, and worked 40 hours a week at the newspaper. You've got time."
that's pretty neat. So you're kind of a workaholic too then, huh?
Yeah, that was fun. And then, you know, and I got lucky when I graduated. They had just happened to have an opening on the sports desk where I'd been working full-time for more than a year, but somebody had left. And so they basically hired me to stay on, moved me from part-time pay to full-time pay. And I still have the letter from the sports editor laying out everything here. And I was so rich. I was making $200 a week. I was the richest guy in town.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So how did the Star Tribune job come about then?
Well, I bounced around a little bit. So I was at the Des Moines Register, the paper I grew up reading. My wife and I got married while we lived in Des Moines. And then about a year later, I got laid off. They eliminated a whole bunch of jobs. So I was the youngest guy in the sports department. I knew when they announced layoffs, I was out the door, and I started looking for another job, and was hired as a sports editor in Ottumwa, Iowa. It was a daily paper, a Monday through Friday, down in southern Iowa. Was there a year and a half, then moved up to the Cedar Rapids Gazette in the sports department there for a year and a half. And then I knew a guy in Des Moines who had moved to Phoenix to work the paper in Phoenix, the Arizona Republic. So he got a hold of me. He says, hey, we got an opening down here, and you should apply. So I did, got hired in Phoenix. We spent 6 years there. Two of our three kids were born down there, but my wife and I are both from Grettinger, Iowa, and we're Midwesterners, and we wanted to get back. And so, yeah, in 1991, the Star Tribune hired me to work on the sports desk. I spent 5 years on the sports desk, editing things like Sid Hartman columns, which is not easy.
Right.
I love Sid, but English, I don't know what his first language was, but when he was typing it, it wasn't English. But that was good training. So 5 years on the desk at the sports desk at the Star Tribune. And then I think it was 1996, they moved me over to a writing job. And I basically did a lot of everything from youth sports to all the pro sports in town. I traveled with all the pro teams at different times, covered a lot of that. And then, like, in the mid-2000s, I started focusing on high school sports, which just was the greatest break ever. And that led to relationships with people at the high school league and Dave Stead, then the executive director. He's the guy who created this job. I can't give that guy enough credit. When I was hired to basically be the journalist for the high school league, nobody had that job in the country. No high school organization had anybody doing that. And Dave had enough foresight, and I think he might have trusted me a little bit. And so that was March of 2010, and here we are more than 15 years later, and I'm just so grateful for a lot of people. But Dave Stead was just huge in my life here.
Okay, yeah, you're right. That's pretty cool. The John's Journal, I should say. Your job was just a unique role because no one in the country has done that before.
Right, and Dave asked me, what do you think you'll do here? And I said, well, I'm going to write. I'm going to go to things and write. And at that time, you know, we had a website, but I had to be convinced that I could post things on our website. Our website guy at the time kind of explained it to me. It wasn't as difficult. You know, I was no tech expert.
Right.
So that's what I told Dave. I said, I'd just like to get out there and tell stories and just help explain things the high school league does. And he basically just said, here you go. You go do what you want to do. We trust you, and we know you do good things. And so I'm really grateful for that.
Yeah, for our listeners, if you ever gone to state tournaments, John's Journal, John's caricature is up on the big video screens. And how'd that caricature come about, John, do you know?
Well, you know, we had a great graphic artist in our office. She's not there anymore, Tracy Wrestler was her name. She created that.
Oh.
I don't know how she did. I don't know how people do these things.
Yeah.
I know she asked me at one point for a photo of myself, and I think she used like the staff photos we all have taken at the office. And I don't know how you do it. I mean, you get on the internet and there's some kind of process to turn that into a cartoon face. And so, yeah, that cartoon face is plastered everywhere.
So how did John's Journal, how'd that idea come about then?
Well,
did you think of it or?
I started the week of the girls' basketball tournament, so I'm in there on Monday morning. I've got a little office, and our website guy comes to me. And I think the basketball tournament was going to start on a Wednesday. So he says, and I knew this guy from previously, and he says, so you're going to write stories and post them on the website, right? I said, yeah, how do we do that? He said, I'll figure out how to do that. What are you going to call it?
Oh.
And I gave it 2 seconds thought. I just said, I don't know. John's Journal? What do you think? He said, that's perfect. So there wasn't any big committee meetings to decide what to call it. Just something that sounded good coming off your tongue. So that, you know, that was a 2 second decision. And then he created a spot on the website and we went from there.
I read John's Journal every post you do. I think I've read about every one, John.
Well, sorry to waste your time, Paul, but thank you.
What was the transition like for you from a traditional newspaper role to, you know, in-house reporter for the Minnesota High School League?
Yeah, it was strange. You know, I was used to being part of a team, like at the Star Tribune. We'd have, you know, half a dozen people involved in high school sports coverage and regular meetings, and you're planning things out. Who's going to go here? Who's going to go there? And so I get to the high school league, and I'm a one-man band. It's just whatever I want to do. And that was strange, you know, for a year. So that just was
nice.
And I would check in with Dave Stead, tell him what I'm planning, and especially if I was going to, like, you know, be an overnight in a hotel somewhere. And pretty early on, he said to me, "You don't need to check in with me." You know, I was kind of thinking, well, that guy, I'm going to treat him kind of like my sports editor.
Yeah.
But he just said, he said, "You don't need to check in. You don't need my approval. Just do what you think you want to do." And I got over that pretty quick. Then it was really freeing. I realized at some point, hey, I'm kind of my own boss here.
Yeah.
Now, the flip side of that is, for all these years, I've also been my own editor. You know, you write at a big newspaper, a couple of different people are going to edit your stories to make sure you got everything spelled right. So then I'm kind of doing this without a net. I write what I'm going to write, and then I'll go through it a couple more times as an editor. And I don't think I've had too many mistakes in there, but that was a different experience too.
I understand. I write a blog every week, and my wife is my editor. she just rolls her eyes when she sees the first draft.
There you go. Well, you're good. It's good to have an editor, and I read all your blogs, Paul. You do a tremendous job. It's
Well, thank you. Hey, you the bet. Other part is you're very famous with the Toyota Camry. Talk about the car, how that come about, and how many different colored cars have you had over the years?
Well, there have been four Camrys starting 12 years ago. So those first 3 years at the high school league, I was driving my own car, and I was just pounding the miles on it, Paul. I was killing that car, driving all over, and it wasn't a new car. And the high school league would reimburse me, you know, by the mile, whatever the IRS rate is. They're writing me big checks every month to cover my mileage. And I said to Dave Stead one time, just off the top of my head, I said, "Do you think there's any possibility we could get a car dealership to be a sponsor of the high school league and provide a car at a reasonable price?"
Mm-hmm.
So he knew a guy. He knew an athletic director who knew the general manager of Maplewood Toyota. And next thing I know, Maplewood Toyota and the Toyota company are asking me, what kind of car, what do you want it to look like? We're going to put graphics on it. And the first one rolled out, and Dave and I went over to Maplewood Toyota and posed for pictures with the first car and the GM over there. And it was a great deal, Paul. Toyota leased these cars to the high school league. Not to me. My name's not on the paperwork, but each car was a three-year lease. For free, for $0. And, you know, and there's Toyota logos on the car, too. It's good advertising for them. And then the high school league paid for the insurance, reimbursed me for gas. So how lucky am I? For 12 years, I had basically some, you know, Toyota hand me keys to four different cars.
Right.
The first one, I want to say the first one was blue. The second one was red. And then the third and the fourth were basically the same, kind of a gray, kind of a silver. And, you know, and it's got my caricature on the side and Toyota logos and a big high school league logo on the hood. And a fun tradition I started with the first one was, if I'm visiting a town or somebody wants to send me in the mail sticker, a bumper sticker, whatever, for their school or their town or their team, we slap them on the car. And we've had some really fun official ceremonies. Like, the whole team will come out. I've had baseball teams, after they play a game, the coach has a sticker in his pocket, so we shoot video and take pictures. I tell, if the kids are putting it on, I said, put it anywhere you like, find a good spot, and we take pictures and we document it and we have a lot of fun. So that's been awesome. And the last car is already gone. The lease has expired. It's been returned. Mm. So I'm not retiring for a couple of months, but I don't have any more events to drive to.
Right.
So, my wife's got a nice new car. I'm going to swipe that from her if I need it. So.
Great promotion, though. Great advertising. I'm sure you have a lot of stories when you're traveling around Minnesota and people see your car and they know it's you.
Well, here's some people who don't. Especially if I'm out in the country on a two-lane road where the speed limit's 55, I'll admit I might sometimes drive 56, but I'll come up. This happens all the time. I come up behind a car and I'm probably going to pass them. But before I do, these poor people, they look in the mirror. All they see is a car behind them. And on the hood is this great big high school league logo, which, you know, it's got the state of Minnesota on it. And I swear these drivers think I'm law enforcement. They just think, oh, that's a cop. So they slow down, and I whip right past them, and then all they see is a cartoon head on the side of a car and a bunch of stickers. And they have no idea. So I think I've scared some people who think I'm going to pull them over.
Oh, wow.
And I haven't had in all these 12 years, I don't know if I ever had a speeding ticket.
Okay, that was my question.
Early on, I may have, maybe in my own car, but I think the last time I was even pulled over, I was outside of Olivia or Renville, and I got pulled over, and this officer was very nice, and he, got my license and everything and went back to his vehicle. And he came up and handed me my license back, and he said, well, John, you haven't had a speeding ticket in a long time, and that's not going to change today. Thank you, officer.
I put on a lot of miles, too. I got a quick story for you. I was in Painesville. Lockbrow football team was playing at Painesville, and Painesville beat Lockbrow really bad, like 70-0 or something, and I started to drive home out of Painesville. And a Painesville police officer pulled me over, going a little fast, and he asked me what I was doing. I said, well, I broadcast the Lockbrow football game. He says, oh, I was just at that football game. He says, I tell you what, you suffered enough tonight. Slow down.
Very good.
Yep.
That's how it should be done.
That's right. John, let's let's talk about some memorable things that you've covered over these, 15 years with the Minnesota High School League. I'm sure you get that question a lot now that you're retiring. What are some of your most memorable John's journals or experiences that you've had?
You know, the ones that there's a group of stories that really stand out, Paul. It's about kids who are athletes who have really overcome some stuff. You know, there was a golfer from McRae. I think one of the very first stories I did my first spring, who was basically a young lady born without one leg. So she's got a prosthetic leg, is a pretty good golfer. I got a call from the AD there or an email wondering if this was something I'd like to write about. And I was there the next day. And Tricia was her name, and she had gone to state as a junior. Her goal was to get back to state down at Becker and win a medal. So I wrote about her, took some pictures, and then I was there at that tournament on the second day. And the guy running our scores, he knew about this, and he kind of whispered to me that, yeah, she was getting a medal. So it was eighth or something. She was so thrilled, and her mom had the two of us stand together. Tricia's got the medal around her neck. She's just beaming. I'm standing there next to her, and her mom sent me a copy of that photo, and that's been in a frame on my office ever since. It's at home now. I've started cleaning out my office, but something like that, and she used a cart, and talk about kids overcoming things. There was a football player back when Stephen Argyle was just the nine-man football powerhouse, won 76 games in a row, multiple state titles. For four of those years, they had a kid who was a two-way lineman. At 3 years old, he'd fallen off a tractor on the farm and lost a leg at the knee. So he had a prosthetic leg from the knee down, and here he was a football player and a basketball player. And I met him and his family at Shriners Hospital here in Minneapolis the day before they were going to play a state semifinal at the Metrodome. He was getting fitted for a new prosthetic leg because he was still growing about every 6 months or a year, he'd get a new leg. And just to see that process, how that works, and what a nice kid this was. Colby Gruhot was his name. And he's still up there in the Stephen Argyle area. He's a farmer, and people have told me he's doing great. But, just writing about a kid like that. And one of the most remarkable ones was a three-sport athlete at Onamia, a young man born in China with one arm. Is in an adoption center. Somebody from up there in Onamia finds him, adopts him. He moves here as a young child, grows up with all these other kids. He's doing what they're doing. He's only got one arm, but he's a wide receiver in football and a basketball player. And I saw him play baseball. This dude with one arm was the catcher on the high school baseball team. How do you catch and throw out base runners with one arm? Right. It was remarkable. I was blown away. You know, he'd catch the ball and just basically flip the glove off his hand, grab the ball in midair, and throw it to second base or third base, and just throw it back to the pitcher. He was a leadoff hitter, great bunter, you know, with one arm, a great speed. Just those kind of things, Paul, they just blow me away. I mean, those are, you're not going to see that on the professional level or the college level.
But, right.
And, you know, as you know, in high school activities, everybody's invited. Everybody's part of the team. And these kids were not only part of the team, they were exceptional athletes. And just the inspiration, you know, I still get from kids like that to this day is just incredible.
It is. It is. And what I learned from you, John, over the years is that you told me this once at a state tournament. You said, you know, Paul, there's a story everywhere. There's always a story. Look yep. for the story, you told me. And in radio, I try to do that too. So,
yeah, you do a good job. And we have area meetings at the high school league every spring and every fall. People in our office kind of travel around the state having meetings with basically athletic directors. And I haven't gone on those for years now, but the first few years I did. And I'd stand up in front of the group and I'd just say, you don't know it, but there is at least one great story in your school. There's a great story or more at every school. You're probably too close to the situation to realize it. And when I go to a lot of times when I go to a game or a tournament, you know, I have a pretty good idea most of the time what I think I'm going to write about. But sometimes you see something so unbelievable and so awesome that, you know, you put on the brakes and you change plans and write about what you see. And there's so many good young journalists in this state. And I've told some of them that I said, you know, half the battle is showing up. You know, you don't have to go into a game or a tournament or whatever with a story in mind, but if you show up, you know, you might see something. If you don't show up, you're never going to see it. So it's countless times I've gone to a game, no specific story in mind, and I see something, and holy cow, what's this about? What's the story here?
Right.
And there's your story. And you know that. You know that as well as anybody.
Yep. Yeah, I like to share an experience I had with you early on in my career here. You came to Montevideo, and you had this story of one of the Montevideo Gold Dusters dancers had a prosthetic leg. I don't know if you remember that. Her name is Kristen.
I sure do. That's another pretty inspirational story.
Right. Kristen DeYoung. And And so I asked you if you wanted to go on the radio with me, John, during the section dance tournament. And you said, yeah, absolutely. So we were about to ready to go on the air. And it was a Saturday afternoon. And, you know, since you grew up in Iowa, you know what I'm talking about.
I sure do.
I remember I turned to you and I said, John, we're going to have a lot of unhappy people because we're going to interrupt the polka show for section dance.
And, that's great.
You know all about that, polka music and small town radio.
I had an experience like that down in Northfield at a basketball game on a Saturday afternoon. It was like a high school jamboree thing. And the guy from the station there was going to do the same thing. He's going to have me on pregame show. And he said, well, we might not be able to do this, John, because if we go on the air now, we're going to interrupt the radio rosary. And if we do that, those gals at the nursing home are going to come with signs and pick at the radio station. So you don't get in the way of the polka show or the radio rosary.
That's right. And another thing I think I need to talk about too is you were at Williams Arena, I believe it was March of 2020.
Yeah,
21, something like that, when COVID hit hard and shut the whole country down. Both of us were at Williams Arena, and that was quite an experience, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'll never forget it. And, you know, earlier that week, well, let's go back to, like, early February that year. My wife and I were in California visiting our son and our daughter-in-law and their new baby. And my wife and I were flying home. We're sitting at the San Francisco airport. This was the day after the Chiefs beat the 49ers in the Super Bowl. And we hadn't really heard much about this, whatever this COVID was. But we're sitting in the airport waiting for a flight. We got time to kill. And we just started seeing people in masks. And you know, we knew this thing was an Asian deal and planes are coming in. And apparently everybody on those flights was wearing a mask. And it was kind of scary because there'd been these scant news reports. And I remember saying to my wife, I don't know that we should touch anything. You know, don't put your hands on any railing. You know, nobody knew.
Yeah, it was scary.
So, yeah, then it was really weird. We made it home safe, but we didn't know. We didn't have a mask. We didn't know what that was. But, yeah, so we get to that girls' basketball week at Williams Arena. And earlier in the week, people in our office were having multiple discussions daily, and they were talking to the State Department of Health. And this was so emotional, even behind the scenes, Paul. I mean, people were in tears. I would be on a conference call at Williams Arena in a back room with the people who were there, with the people in the office, and everybody's kind of discussing what's the right thing to do. And I mean, people were crying. Mm-hmm. Nobody wanted to stop these tournaments. But, you know, the right decision was made. I have no doubt. It was awful.
Yep.
You know, kids are getting ready to play, and then, you know, it's 7 o'clock in the morning. Announcement goes out, tournament is canceled, there'll be no boys' state tournament, ended up with no spring sports. You know, that fall was very limited, that winter was kind of limited, but yeah, I'll never forget. That was the absolute low point of my career doing this stuff. Everybody was so far, you know, and I think the first decision, if my memory's right, was each school playing at the girls' state basketball tournament is going to get 100 tickets. We're going to limit the crowd.
Right.
And then the decision was made, you know, with a little more information. No, we're not going to play at all. And I've talked about this with a lot of people asking me about that decision. And I said, at that point, nobody knew anything, but other than this could kill you.
Right.
And I said, there has to be a line, and you can be on the side of the line that says, let's maybe not be careful enough, or let's be on the other side. Let's be plenty careful, maybe more careful than we need to be. And that's what the decision was. I don't know if we were more careful than we needed to be, but nobody wanted to find out a week later that, you know, grandpa who was at the game has passed away.
Right.
Or little kids, you know. Yep. That was what scared the heck out of everybody. And,
yep.
You know, and it, people compared what we did here to other states, and everybody was different, but I have no qualms about that at all. And I wasn't part of the decision-making process. I was helping get the word out. But, I mean, how do you mess with such a serious, uncertain thing that people are already dying? It was awful. I felt bad for, especially for the kids, but everybody in those communities and you know, broadcasters and reporters. Yep. Those are so, well, as you know, you and I have so much fun at those tournaments. It's just the highlight of the year. And to have that snatched away by COVID was just awful for everybody.
It was. I remember standing in Williams Arena waiting for my media pass, and there was a long delay, and some Minnesota High School League officials came out and said, the whole tournament's canceled, go home.
Yep.
And I remember walking out of Williams Arena to my car in the parking lot, and I kept looking back at Williams Arena. Yeah. And I was like in a twilight zone. I said, this can't be happening. This is unreal. It was just the weirdest thing. But it was the right decision.
It wasn't easy, and again, you know, and it just, I know how hard it was for everybody, including everybody at the high school league, and nobody wanted to do that, but, you know, it was the right thing.
All right. Well, John, if you're just tuning in, we're visiting with John Millay of the Minnesota High School League. John is retiring here after 15 years at the Minnesota High School League, and 20 years at the Minneapolis Star Tribune. And, John, as we wrap it up here, I know... Well, we Dawson Boyd's Carrie Tolson. You know Carrie very well, and she was elected in the National Hall of Fame. I think you were there for that, weren't you?
It was every summer. The National Federation of State High School Associations, that's the big national group that all of our state groups belong to. They have a convention, and it's in a different city every year. I'm trying to think where it was when Carrie went in. I don't remember, but. You know, we got to spend time with her and her husband and her family, her kids, and when we have a Hall of Famer going in, and we've had a lot of them. You know, Joe Mauer went in last year, Bob McDonald a few years back, but we take time out while we're all there and have a really nice dinner. The high school league picks a restaurant in whatever city, and everybody who's there from our staff, some of our board of directors members are always there, and then the Hall of Famer and their family. So we had a really nice dinner in a nice restaurant, and the big honor for Carrie, certainly she deserved to go into the National High School Hall of Fame. Holy cow. Yep. But I think there's usually like a dozen people who go in every year, and most of them, you know, you're not familiar with. They're state people from other states who are great athletes, or like Dave Stead, he's a member of the Hall of Fame, people who've done great things. But there are big names. There are big name professional athletes, two or three every year that you know, the Joe Mauers.
Yep.
But one of those inductees is always selected to speak on behalf of the group. So Kerry did that. And I'll tell you what, Paul, I've been to 13 or 14 of these conventions, 13 or 14 of these Hall of Fame banquets. I've heard a lot of these Hall of Famers speak. Kerry was the best of them all. I mean, she's just such a good personality. She does a lot of TV work. She's so good on camera. And the National Federation sends a video crew to visit each Hall of Famer in the months leading up. So everybody who was there at that convention got to see Kerry Collison give a tour of Dawson Boyd School and around town. And,
nice.
And, you know, it was really good. And then she got up to speak, and she's wearing a gown. She looked great.
Yep.
It was one of the most impressive things I've seen. You know, she represents Minnesota well all the time. You know, she's one of many, and just proud to be there, proud to call her a friend, and really a cool thing.
Yep, it was. And Kerry's an outstanding. Just a great human being, for sure.
She sure is.
Yep. Well, John, we're trying to get 50-some years of your career in a 30-minute interview here, so I don't know. How are we doing?
can't be. If somebody told me you got to write about your 51-year career, but you can only do it in 500 words, I'd say forget it. Forget it.
Is there a book in the works down the road? Or?
Well, possibly. I've got an idea for... Basically, it's already written. I just would have to put it together. It would be a bunch of my favorite stories from my time at the Star Tribune and my time with the high school league. And I've got permission from both to reprint those things. And I've been kind of talking to some publishers. It's nothing I'm jumping on too hard right now, but maybe down the road something like that could happen. But yeah, you never know. I've had that idea in the back of my head. Actually, before COVID, I think we were well on our way to coming up with a deal with a publisher, but then COVID just wiped out everything, and some of those companies really haven't rebounded yet. But yeah, we'll see. Not. I don't know how likely it is, but as I've told my wife, I said, you know what? Everything I've written has been in a newspaper or on a website. I'd like to have something. You know, a book would be something that could be here when I'm gone for our grandkids and whoever. And it's not. You know, it's not about me. It's about all these great people and teams and towns and stories, and I think it'd be kind of neat to have all those gathered together.
I got, for Christmas 2 years ago, I got all my children put together all my blogs and made it into a book form.
Oh, and what a great idea.
Oh, yeah. I cried for a half hour, I think.
Oh, what a great idea.
It was awesome.
Yeah, my family did something like that in T-shirt form. My last event on this job was Saturday at Target Field with the state baseball championship games. And my wife worked with Eric Martins, the director of the high school league, and he worked with the Twins. We had a little reception up in the club level next to the press box. The Twins provided cupcakes and drinks, and we had some family from Iowa come. We had 15 or 20 people. And then before the third game of the day, they had me down on the field. Eric kind of presented me with a game ball. So my wife and our three kids who were there, unbeknownst to me till they got there.
Oh.
She had T-shirts made. Each T-shirt had a different picture of me, most of them from when I was in high school.
Oh, wow.
In the 70s. So they all had a different picture of me on these T-shirts. People enjoyed that, seeing me in the 70s as a high school kid with the big hair and the sideburns and looking cool, man, looking fly.
Yeah, the 70s clothing was the best, too, wasn't it?
Oh, it's never been topped, and it never will, Paul. You know that.
Hey, before we wrap it up here, talk about your wife, Beth.
Yeah.
Talk about her, because you're gone a lot.
Yes. Yeah, my wife is a sports journalism widow a lot, you know, and she's just the best, Paul. We started dating when I was a senior in high school, and she was a junior, and she followed me to two different colleges, and then we got married, and three kids. We have two sons and a daughter. Our two sons both live in Northern California, a couple hours apart. One of them, he and his wife have a six-year-old and a three-year-old. That's the joy of our life, those two little knuckleheads. And our daughter lives here. She's a teacher. But Beth, you know, she was a stay-at-home mom f- for most of the time while our kids were little, and then she did some different things. And you know, she was a she's one of these special people who just did special things for years. She worked as a para with special ed kids in a couple of Farmington elementary schools. And then after that, she went to a nursing home in Bloomington as a activities person working with Alzheimer's patients. Mm. So she worked with those elementary special ed kids and then spent years wrapping her arms around Alzheimer's patients and making their day better. And she retired a couple years ago. And she's really not a sports fan. I'll get excited about the Twins or whatever it is. She'll watch the Vikings games with me, and she likes the Lynx. She, you know, she's a female from Iowa.
Yep.
Caitlin Clark is pretty important in our house.
Yep.
So she'll watch the Indiana Fever. We watch the Vikings. I have a hard time getting her to go to, you know, a Twins game with me, but that's okay. You know, she keeps me grounded because she's not all gaga about sports. She's got other interests that we both share, and you know, we like to go to movies and we like to go out to eat. And I've told people, I don't know what retirement's like. I don't golf or hunt or fish or boat, or we don't have a cabin. And I just spend time with my wife. You know,
that's right.
We've got TV shows we like to watch. We like to sit on the deck. We walk the dog through the woods next to our house. And yeah, I've told her a million times, if it not for you, I don't know what I'd be doing.
Right.
You know, and then there was a time when I was in college for a couple of summers in Iowa, baseball and softball on the high school level, they're played in the summer. They're having those seasons right now. And I played baseball in high school, but in college, I became an umpire, high school baseball and softball, and I really liked it. And back in those days, you know, you'd subscribe to the Sporting News, and in the back, there were classified ads, and there were ads for umpire schools in Florida.
Right, I remember
that. I sent away for a couple brochures and find out what it would cost and what it would take. And I said to her one time, I'm thinking about going to an umpire school. I think it would be a heck of a nice career to be a professional baseball umpire, you know, not knowing.
Right.
80% of them never make it past the low minor leagues. And she looked at me. She might have grabbed me by the collar. And she said, wait a minute. You're getting a degree in journalism, and you've got a pretty steady girlfriend. What are you talking about? She was right. She was right. I give her credit.
Yeah.
And I'm really, you know how lucky guys like us are, Paul, to have the wives we've had, the partners we've had for all these years. Yeah, I'm grateful for a lot of things and a lot of people, but she's at the top of that list.
High school sweethearts. You remember the first time you saw her? Or the first time you met?
It's strange. We grew up in a town of 800 people, but we didn't run in the same circles. I knew her older sister, who's 3 years older than me. I knew her better than I knew Beth.
Okay.
And, you know, she wasn't in sports. I think we were both in things like choir and maybe some school plays.
Right.
But so I'm a senior. It's my last semester. It's like January of 1977, and I'm taking Spanish class for the first time. I don't think it was a requirement, but, you know, I was on that senior slide. I wasn't paying attention anyway. And I ended up with a D in the class, my only D in high school. But I'm sitting there kind of class clown. I'm getting ready to graduate. I'm a big hot shot. She just happened to be sitting in the desk behind me. So I just started turning around and telling jokes and got her to giggle a couple times. And we started to talk. And then the next thing you know, we're going on a date to the Pizza Hut. We pointed out to our kids the Pizza Hut in Emmitsburg, Iowa. That's the sacred location where your mom and dad had their first date.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, everybody knew everybody, but you weren't really close friends with everybody. I don't know if she and I had ever had a conversation till that day when I was a senior and she was a junior.
All right. Yeah, sounds like a really great relationship you two have.
Great.
So.
Yeah, it's awful nice.
All right,
it's
John, nice. Wrapping it up here, I got one more question for you.
Yes, sir.
What are you going to miss most about your role with the Minnesota High School League, John?
Well, I've been asked that question a lot here. It's going to be people like you, Paul. It's going to be all these people I see at tournaments, whether it's officials, PA people, scoreboard operator, you know, so many people. It takes so many people to make these state tournaments happen, and just even regular season games. I like to chat with officials, the chain gang, the officials in volleyball or wrestling, whatever it is, the concession people, the ticket takers, even though I never have to buy a ticket, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, it's those relationships with just everybody.
That's
you know,
right.
And kids, you know, kids I've known, you know, like Tricia, the golfer from McRae, she and I have kept in touch for 15 years. We'll, you know, see a post on social media or get a text. And, you know, she's grown up. She's married. She's got kids. And just those relationships that hopefully last forever. And at the state track meet last week, one of the old-time officials we were chatting, and he said, boy, John, I think I can speak for everybody. We're really going to miss seeing you at these things. And I said, hey, I'm going to have time to go. I know how to get a free pass. I might show up. You never know. Don't count your chickens. I might not be gone. So,
yep.
But I'm gonna. You know, I don't plan to do anything. My retirement date's August 15th. I'm gonna fade away into the woodwork for the rest of the year, test the waters of retirement. We'll do some traveling and take it from there. But yeah, it's the people, Paul.
Yep.
You know, the games are great. I never cared about a final score in my life in this job.
Right.
It's the story. What's the story? What story can I tell? And it's the people. And it always has been. It always will be. And that includes you, my friend.
Oh, thank you, John. I've enjoyed our times together. Even though they're short at state tournaments, or when you come out to Southwest Minnesota, I've enjoyed our time together. And me and you are alike. Our jobs, you're a little different, higher level with your job, but you know, we're alike. So
you know, when I think of people who are lucky, I think to your listeners out there, Paul. You've made such an impact, and you're still doing it. Everywhere you go, everybody knows who you are. You're friendly to everybody. You're the most famous guy in that part of the world.
Oh.
I treasure your friendship, and and everything you do is great. They're so lucky to have you down there.
Well, thank you, John, and thank you for all of you've done for the Minnesota High School League, and it's just great. And you go have yourself a pretzel and cheese now, so. You can have as many as you want.
I just may do that.
Right. Thanks, John. You have a great retirement.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate that.
Yeah. John Millay from the Minnesota High School League.